This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Well, summer events are here, and that means an opportunity to get together with friends and family for various functions like graduations or other celebrations. Why not bring recycling into the mix? Well, you wonder, how can that happen? Well, that is why the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District has made it easy for residents in Porter County to take advantage of it. And we have with us to talk about it and some other topics today, too, Erica Mahalik. She's a spokesperson for Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District. And Erica, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about these great opportunities for folks to have some fun out in the park or maybe in the backyard, even if it's a big backyard with a lot of people, to be able to recycle and still entertain themselves. And then in particular, the Recycling and Waste Reduction District is making it very, very easy to do so. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. So our district in Porter County is actively providing free event recycle containers and liners for Porter County residents planning summer events. Community groups, schools, nonprofits, commercial businesses, and residents, particularly Porter County residents, are encouraged to utilize the free program. Event recycling containers are great for graduation parties and fundraisers, concerts, and small gatherings. What's particularly special and very, very well received with these containers is that hosts and event organizers can prevent large amounts of recyclables from entering into landfills, helping guests to separate their waste.
Now, the idea, of course, is that there's some things that can't be recycled. It's just trash. And that's what you put the trash in, is in the trash containers. But yeah, the recyclables should be saved back for good reason. And the idea, I guess, is to have these particular special collection containers put up next to the trash can someplace out at that picnic or the graduation ceremony or whatever?
Yes, absolutely. So we encourage event hosts to place the event recycle containers next to garbage cans in high traffic areas. Containers can be used to recycle common items such as aluminum cans, plastics, and glass bottles.
Now, these are containers that are basically it's a standalone frame, isn't it? And the bag that would hold the recyclables fits into it or fits underneath it, I guess, so it's easy to be able to change out the bags once they fill up with empties?
Yes, absolutely. So event recycle containers are supplied with clear plastic liners that fit directly onto the collection containers. And again, the Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County suggests use of event containers at gatherings both big and small. And yes, absolutely, mm-hmm. Liners are provided up front with the frames.
Now, do these cost anybody, the people organizing the event, cost anything to have these containers and the bags that could come with it set up?
Nope, there is zero cost for Porter County residents. We ask that interested individuals confirm availability and reserve recycle containers at least 1 week prior to scheduled events.
Have you gotten notification so far since you've got the word out about the Clearstream containers to take advantage of that for the next ceremonies or for the next picnic coming up?
Yes, we have to date within our season, we've received quite a few calls relative to Clearstream containers. And yes, absolutely, it is a program that is in full swing and that Porter County residents are actively utilizing.
Well, it's an opportunity here that people should take advantage of in Porter County, and let's hope they do. Yes. Besides having the containers for these event recycling containers to be able to put out, I know that the Recycling and Waste Reduction District in Porter County has a regular household hazardous waste collection events. In fact, there was one in Porter County just this past weekend. Tell us about it, and how did things go?
Absolutely. So our Recycling and Waste Reduction District sponsors a number of mobile household hazardous waste collection events. Events typically run from May to October, and these events really are designed to help residents properly dispose of unwanted household chemicals and products. Sites vary per year. There's no fixed or set location. Sites vary per season per year. Most recently, we were at Westchester Intermediate School in Chesterton this past Saturday, June 26th. And the event was fantastic. We had about 330 cars in attendance that day. Events run from 9 a.m. to 2 across our season. And at our collection events, Porter County residents can dispose of products containing corrosive, toxic, ignitable, or reactive substances. Common household hazardous waste items include aerosol cans, antifreeze, oil, sharps, needles, oil-based paints, solvents, paint thinners, pesticides, diesel fuel, kerosene, and flammable liquids. So typically those items that require special care disposal. I'll note that popular summer items have included lawn care products, pool chemicals, blacktop sealer, deck maintenance products, and stains.
Are those acceptable? Are they acceptable? Oh, that's good to hear.
Absolutely.
Now, when you have something like this that comes about on a regular basis, obviously you're talking about items that I guess for the average home would either be in the garage or in the basement. I suppose that it's easy to be able to, if they're not being used, to get rid of them, get them out of the house so they aren't causing a hazard at home.
Absolutely. And summertime is a great season as temperatures are warmer for individuals to venture out to their garages and clean out unwanted product and chemical. I'll note that as much as we make effort to accept those types of items, there are items in which we do not accept.
Yeah.
Typically at our household hazardous waste collection events, we do not accept electronics or latex paint, tires or grill propane cylinders, styrofoam, and large containers over 55-gallon in size.
And I guess there is a place around the area, someplace that does accept latex paint, so the family can get rid of those cans of paint and still make sure that they have a good use for them.
Absolutely, and we encourage all Porter County residents to visit our website at portercountyrecycling.org for further recycling resources.
I understand that I guess there's a collection point over in Hobart that takes in the latex paint, and I guess they mix it together to make some kind of strange generic color of paint so people can pick up the paint there and use it if they're just doing like putting a coat of paint on something as maybe like a sealant or some kind of underneath the final coat of paint that will go up as some kind of way to cover up whatever is defective or whatever on whatever they're painting. So they have a use for it. It's still very good to paint, to be sure. Now, besides the list that shows what you can't recycle with the household hazardous waste material, in general, how have the recycling been in Porter County these days with the drop-off sites and the cooperative programs that refuse haulers have with the county on curbside recycling?
Absolutely. So within Valparaiso, we have recently relocated our recycle receptacles from Strachan Ventil in Valparaiso to the Valparaiso compost site. That particular site is located at 2150 West Lincoln Way on Highway 130, about 1 mile west of intersection with Joliet. Current hours at that site are Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And at the Valparaiso compost site, we've added a plastic bag collection. Porter County residents can drop off clean and dry grocery plastic bags for recycling. So very much encouraging Porter County residents to utilize that at our particular site in Valpo. Across Porter County, we have 6 locations available for residents to take their curbside recycling. And again, common recyclables include glass bottles, jars, aluminum cans, and cardboard, plastic bottles, tubs, and jugs. And we always like to extend out to individuals, when in doubt, throw it out. Mm-hmm. And again, to utilize our website for a full list of acceptable items.
I know that it's very important to take a look at PorterCountyRecycling.org to find out exactly what's accepted. And there has been a problem, I know, in the past, and I know that your folks at the Solid Waste Management District have fought very hard to be able to keep the drop-off sites open. And it's been very difficult, I know, in some cases because of the contamination that's out there. Some of the folks mentioned there at the office about when they go back out to the sites to see how clean they are, what kind of problems are running into?
Well, absolutely. Common misconception with recycle receptacles is that, individuals can dispose of food waste or their regular trash in such of a container. It's simply not the case. We, are actively trying to encourage folks to utilize the bins for recycling. It is very much a challenge in extending out information to individuals because in a lot of instances those receptacles are treated as trash bins and they are not.
I know that there are always times of the year, and it seems to be around the spring cleanup time. And I know for sure that the pandemic has kind of messed up the schedule in that respect, because there were times early last year when trash haulers couldn't pick up anything that wasn't in a specific container that they could pick up mechanically, that they couldn't go out there and actually haul material around and put it into a truck for a proper disposal. So I imagine it's probably been very difficult for the folks in the district to be able to not only keep track of what's supposed to be recycled and what can't be recycled and keep the trash out.
Yes. Absolutely, 100%.
If anybody has any questions, again, what specifically goes in the containers to be recycled either at curbside or at the drop-off recycling sites there in Porter County, and some of the other information, too, about programs and events coming up, where can they go to find out more?
Absolutely. So our main website is portercountyrecycling.org. It's our primary site, and individuals can also contact us at the office during business hours, Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. Our office line is 219-465-3694.
Well, thank you very much, Erica, for being with us to talk about some of these programs and events that are coming up here. And again, to check on the website and find out more about what can be recycled, what can't be recycled, and in turn, be able to not only keep your recycling containers clean, free of trash, make it easier for the disposal and recycling processing, to be sure. And we hope to have you back on again real soon.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again so much for your time today, Chris. It's been a pleasure to connect with you.
Well, thank you. Erica Mihalik is a spokesperson for the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District. Back after the tornado, a stranger came to town with a red pickup, a wood-fired oven, and a message of hope. Free hand-tossed pizzas for everyone. Brian Rock is the fellow we're talking about from Merrillville, and he's with us today to tell us more about his mission, I suppose, to help people that need some help, especially after a natural disaster like all of the tornadoes that came through, in particular over in Chicagoland, but here in Northwest Indiana. And Brian, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us first about yourself, about your experiences and your involvement with your own business that you started up that got you started in a way to help people when they have had problems of their own to deal with, like a loss of a home or worse.
My background, I come from a military background. I was in the Army for 3 years, and that taught me a lot about life and about helping others and selfless service, and set me up on the right path, I guess. And I started up a company in 2020 called Elevated Pie Company. We're a mobile wood-fired pizzeria. And I started that company with a mission to help others in times of need. It's really nice that I have a skill. I can make food. And sometimes after storms, people don't have power, water, gas. They have no way to eat for sometimes weeks on end. So I'm able to go out there and serve up some free pizzas to those in need. All of our profits we make from local markets that we do go back into this type of mission, to feeding those in times of need. So it's really a good way to be able to give back and help people out.
I know you like to call your venture Operation Pizza Front, and that certainly shows with your military background, the time of service that you spent overseas fighting the war. And I guess this, too, is a way to help yourself deal with some of the stress that you faced and in turn probably still face every day. I guess it's a way to kind of shunt it off for another time.
That's correct. It's really nice just to be able to get out there and get in the focus, get in the groove of making some pizza, and really gets my mind off of things. And it's just it's a nice de-stressor. You would think it's stressful. You know, when I work these markets, I'm actually pretty stressed. Mm-hmm. I'm there having to make a quota to make my money for the day. But when I'm able to go out and get back, I'm not worried about making anything. I'm able to sit there and actually do it alone. I'm able to get about 100 pizzas out a day by myself. And it just really gets a de-stressor for me. It's nice to get out and talk to people and hear their stories and share my stories with them.
And I know that you easily admit the fact that you have PTSD because of your time in Afghanistan. And you mentioned, I know, that it's a way to help deal with it, that it's kind of been your medicine, I suppose, in a way, making pizza. And in particular, for people that are probably going through the same stresses because of a disaster at home that you had to face overseas.
That's correct. Yeah, it's you know, people after these storms, they're going through it too. They have a lot going on. They got insurance agents over there. There's a lot going on the first 72 hours after a disaster. And I think this is a good way just to calm them down too. They don't have to think about anything. They can just go and eat. So it's really nice all the way around. We can share some of the same stresses.
Now, when you have this opportunity to be able to help people out in a natural disaster, how do you make up for it in your business to be able to help take care of some of the costs of the extra dough and the extra effort that you have to make?
Well, usually we were taking the money that we were making from the markets.
Yeah.
And that actually ran up pretty quick. We don't work that many markets. It just started for the season. But people have been asking how to donate, and people have been donating, and I've made, I think, almost $4,000 so far, and that's enough to get out and make, you know, another almost 1,000 pizzas.
Wow.
So I'll be able to follow, you know, I'm going to keep feeding Naperville as they need it, feed around here, and then say a hurricane hits somewhere pretty bad. I think I'm going to head down there and set up for a week or so and just do what I can to help. It's nice to be able to help, and I think I want to follow the storms and be able to do this full time. It's a lot. It's a really self-fulfilling project I got going on.
Now, Brian, I understand that one of the most recent opportunities you had to help people out was over in Darien after the tornado moved through over in Illinois. How did you first get word about this and get some tips from the authorities as to where to go to be able to set up shop, so to speak, and help people?
I actually saw the story on the morning news on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had some of our own tornado warnings out here, and so we were kind of on edge thinking what could happen, and woke up in the morning and saw how devastated some of the neighborhoods over in Darien were. And so I had some dough already to go, and I decided to take it out there and just go out there. The way I found it was actually just drove out to the town, and I was just driving, and I stopped at the first neighborhood I saw that looked like they were hit pretty hard. There was a lot of the street was closed off. There was a lot of workers out there working on the power lines and working on everything. And I talked to some of the neighbors, and they had no power, no water, no gas, no anything. So they had no way to even eat. So I just knew that they needed to be served.
What did you do? Just set up shop there, I suppose. Pitch a tent, bring the truck out there, and get the wood-fired oven going?
Exactly. I actually have to wake up a few hours early to start the oven. It closes up, and so I just put the fire out when I drive, but it retains most of the heat. It takes about 3 hours to get up to 900 degrees.
Uh-huh.
But, I just drove out there. I served underneath a tent, got a little screen around it, and I'm able just to sit out there, and, you know, I can set up anywhere. So it's a really cool thing.
Now, what kind of reaction did you get from folks that had a chance to have some pizza that might have been maybe the first meal in hours, maybe even longer, because of the damage at their homes?
Yeah, a lot of people really loved the pizza. They were just happy that someone came to bring them some food. A lot of people had no idea how they were going to eat, and I think it helped them, you know, being able to sit there and get a free meal and not have to worry about where the meal's coming from or how they're going to get it.
So you're just keeping an eye on the weather, eye on the sky, as the meteorologists have to see where the next storms are going to be, and you'll be headed that way if they come up again?
100%. That's my mission, and that's what I really enjoy doing, and I think I'll keep doing it.
Brian Rock is a gentleman who has a mission and a vision that he wants to help make pizzas for people at natural disaster sites. And he's from Merrillville, and he takes his skills and talents over into Illinois as they show up in the weather. And we appreciate you spending time talking about it with us today.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much.
This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
We grew up in the neighborhood that was near Pulaski School. And at the time that I went, it was an East Pulaski and a West Pulaski. One was for the black children, and the other one was for white children. We had a black principal, and then they had a white principal. And it wasn't until the neighborhood became completely integrated that they integrated those two schools. I grew up on a block called, it was on 16th and Rhode Island Street. It was black families and white families. On the corner from me, we had a little grocery store. We called her Missy. She was a white lady. I don't think we even knew how to pronounce her name. She had a Polish last name. We didn't know how to pronounce it, so we just called her Missy. On 16th and Vermont, we had a grocery store, and it was run by, her name was Mildred. And then on the other one block east, we had another grocery store in the corner, and it was run by Louis Katz. And so we had these three stores right together, but they were run by white folks, and we went to those stores. I went to Pulaski School, as I said. In the seventh grade, the school board changed the rules. And they said that you had to go to the school that was in the district that was zoned for. Well, my sister, my brother, and most of the older kids in my neighborhood went to Roosevelt School, which, as you know, was an all-black school. There was a lot of history. There was all the camaraderie, and I was looking forward to going there. But by the time I got in the seventh grade, the school board had changed the rules. So we had to go to Emerson School. Emerson was majority white. As a matter of fact, when I graduated from high school, we had 135 graduates. And I believe it was 9 or maybe 11 who were black. We had a young lady who was very athletic, and she went out to become a cheerleader. And they booed her off the stage. Every year we had what we called a Christmas pageant. The participants were white. I don't remember if I was in maybe the 11th or 12th grade. They allowed one of the wise men to be black. But all the angels were white girls with blonde hair, okay? You know, we just were not, we were not welcome in terms of participating in that Christmas pageant. There were some times when there were some heated exchanges. There was some name calling, the N-word, that kind of thing. You know, we didn't necessarily like it, but we just kind of adjusted. I belonged to GAA, and they don't even do that anymore. It was called the Girls Athletic Association. And at the time, Emerson School owned a popcorn machine in the Memorial Auditorium. Whomever was sponsoring the event would ask the girls from the GAA to come and you know, do the popcorn. But if it was a basketball game between Gary Roosevelt and Gary Frabel, where most of the participants were black, most players were black, most of the students attending were black, then they did not want to pop on that night. But those of us who were black, we were happy to do it on that night because there were a lot of black folks there. So you just kind of, I mean, you knew it. I'm not sure if acceptance is a good word for it, but you just kind of grew on you, I guess. And you know, sometimes even the teachers would create issues that did not need to be. I had a biology teacher I'll never forget who one day made a comment. If anybody came to her and caught a raccoon, she would send them down into the central district in our area to sell it to us. Because we ate that. We never ate it at my house, you know. So things like that, they happened. As I said, you kind of adjusted, but we didn't like it. We kind of adjusted.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. On tomorrow's program, I have a conversation with Leslie Plezak with Purdue University Northwest about this fall's Sinai Forum Speaker Series. Who's on the list? We'll tell you more about that and another edition as well of Green Fleet Radio. All coming up on tomorrow's Regionally Speaking program.